Hello and welcome to our fourth episode of the City Health and Wellbeing Podcast. I'm your host, Vishal Mehta. I'm a senior scientist with the Stockholm Environment Institute, SEI, based in the U.S. Center in Davis, California. SEI is an international nonprofit that works in several countries at the intersection of science, policy, and practice. You can find out more about SEI at www.sei.org. We are interested in unpacking what makes a city a healthy environment where every citizen can have the opportunity to thrive. In this, our fourth episode, we move to Kenya at SEI's Africa Center in Nairobi. I'm delighted to have with us Romana Sopio, who is the program leader for urban sustainability at the Africa Center in Nairobi. Welcome, Romanas. Thank you for joining us at 7 in the morning your time.
Thank you, Vishal, for having me.
Well, before we start our episode, which I'm very excited to let you all know that today we'll be focusing on air pollution studies. Before we do that, Romanas, how about you tell us more about yourself for the audience, a bit more about your background, and also about the Africa Center. You know, how big is it? What are its areas of focus?
Thanks a lot, Vishal, for those introduction and also for inviting me to share some of the issues about our work on city health and well-being, focusing on Africa. Yeah, my name is Romanas Opio, and I'm an urban planner by training. That's my background. I've been at SEI since 2019, working in this city health and well-being at the SEI African Center. Within SEI African Center, we have three programs. One on urban sustainability, which I head, which I'm a program leader, and which is also the host of the program we are going to discuss on city health and well-being. We also have a program on energy and climate change, and so the third program on natural resources and ecosystems. Of course, the Kenya office covers the entire Africa, so Kenya is just hosting the African office. So in terms of size, we have around 12 researchers who are domiciled in the African Center, having around five nationalities there within the African Center. And also we have a rich program, internship program, and also the PhD and postdoctoral fellowship program, which we host people from other centers, also from other universities, not only in Africa, but also postdoctoral students in other universities outside Africa, Europe, US, and other areas. So we are fairly a global institution based in Africa. So that's the spirit of SEI Africa.
Well, Romanas, in our previous episodes, Steve Sindaby, Diane, Rachel, they've mentioned quite a bit about the City Health and Wellbeing Initiative. Steve told us a lot about the wellbeing survey, participatory mapping, focus on water and waste management from the citizens' perspectives, and also the problems of fluorosis or excess fluoride in groundwater. So I thought that this episode we could focus more on your air pollution work. And let's start from the beginning. When did this air pollution work start? And did it actually start in Nairobi, if I remember correctly?
Yeah, this work of air pollution from the African Center perspective, actually, in collaboration, actually, the University of York, we've been working very closely since the year 2018 on this issue of air pollution. Actually, it started in 2018 when York and the African Center, they working with the informal settlements in Nairobi, Mukuru. Mukuru is one of the informal settlements around the industrial area of Nairobi. And this is where the air quality work started, with the issue of participatory citizen science engagement, where the locals were given opportunity to participate, to air their views about air quality, and also to have some of the basic evidence using low-cost sensors in terms of collecting air quality data. So this marked the foundation of this work. But later on, the center invested in 2019 through the Clean Air Coalition, CCSC, and the UNEP, they worked with the Nairobi County in trying to have a more institutionalized way of collecting air quality data. And this led to the issue of the center providing support to the Nairobi City County to come up with an air quality regulation so that with the baseline information now, they are able now to know what is the status of air quality, which can now inform the issue of regulation. So that's where it started. Of course, you know, most of these projects are normally short-term, maybe 2 to 3 years, and policy evolution takes more time because you need to get buy-in from the politicians. So that led to a lot of investment, the co-funding, trying to ensure that we partner with the UNEP and other partners to ensure that we get that. So that marked the foundation. So moving now to maybe to Nakuru, with regard to city health and well-being, where we use one of the evidence to support our work on environmental health and quality. We use air quality as one way of coming up with evidence which can help the team to analyze areas where we feel that the city is not doing well in terms of air quality. And we mapped out various zones. One was the the green spaces, where you have one of the green spaces within the city. And we had a sensor, their local sensor called a purple air sensor. One, another sensors, we placed it in a mall, a commercial mall near near a roundabout where there's a lot of motorized traffic. Another sensors we placed in a public office, actually by the Department of Environment. And another sensor we placed in the Nawasco offices. So this was just to measure to see whether a land use has an impact on air quality. And of course, from the basic analysis, we found actually the best air quality was within the green space, where you find is we are the least in terms of the air quality scores. So that gives an indication that actually air quality is a land use oriented concern. And this is very, very useful for the city health and well-being to know how do we ensure that we encourage certain kind of land uses, and also look at how do we absorb the air quality, the bad air in our urban spaces, which I think is critical for most of the work we are doing at City Health and Wellbeing.
Yeah, that brings up so many fascinating questions, right? I mean, for example, I'm sure there are and have been air quality laws, you know, national air quality laws for a long time. So in what way is this helping maybe understand the actual levels of air pollution? That's one question. Another I can think of is there must already be some air quality monitoring. Is it too infrequent or too sparse, not reliable? In what ways has this data revealed new insights? Is one question I had. And is there, like, you talked about land use, but what about, you know, air quality regulations for motor vehicles, you know, emissions testing? Is it getting to that stage as well? And I have a few more questions, but maybe we'll start with this.
Michel, I think one thing we need to appreciate that this part of the world, especially Africa, the dense of sensors is still low, in terms of investment of sensors, because this was given to the national government through the meteorological department, Kenya National Air. And we find that the meteorological department, they don't have much sensors in terms of this. They have not invested. So they have strategic places where they can measure the age of humidity and also the rainfall and others, which are not quite there. So you find that at national level, that's the role of the meteorological authority. But in Kenya, we have a devolved system since 2013, where we have devolved units, and we have 47 counties. And most of these 47 counties, they don't have capacity to have or invest in sensors. And even if they invest those sensors, they don't have capacity to interpret the data. So this is what we are trying to change, the narrative we are trying to change. First, encourage that you can still invest in local sensors at least 12 baseline data. And if you encourage the investment in local sensors, we are going also to increase the dense of air quality sensors within the countries. So, to me, I think we are trying to devolve this to ensure that even at the lower levels of administration, we're able to have baseline information, and this baseline information can only be done through encouraging to have these sensors. And secondly, also to look at the frontline officers, look at their capacity first. Are they able even to interpret the basic data? Are they able to download? And what we are trying to encourage most of our counties and cities is to go for real-time data, which they don't have which they can monitor from their desks, and they are able now to download and inform and make a decision. And you see, we have very elaborate environmental laws. Through Kenya, we have National Environmental Management Authority, which is mandated to come out with environmental laws. So they have all this about air quality regulations and all this. But at the county level or at the city level, they don't have such a vibrant way of dealing with this. And most of the counties are now coming up with the Climate Change Action Plan, which are supposed to help them to institutionalize the ways of measuring this air quality as part of it and other aspects. So there are a lot of things which we are trying to help the government and the county government at the city level to institutionalize, which we are missing. So we have good laws at national level, but at the city and the county level, they are still grappling with coming up on how to undertake all this.
And Romanus, how about the question about, say, emissions policy for motor vehicles? Is the conversation at too early a level or stage to talk about, you know, phasing out certain fuels, supporting, say, electric vehicles, moving away from diesel and petroleum? Is it getting that far? Is it helping this air pollution data make connections to human health? And then, is it connecting up with the climate action plans into the transportation sector?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of engagement because of our countries, Kenya's commitment to the NDCs. I think which is ambitious, but it also gives us an opportunity to fast track some of the efforts we have in terms of addressing that. So in Kenya, we have National Transport Safety and Safety Authority, which is mandated to look at the issue of the air quality and also the issue of look at the regulation for the transport sector. And with this, with the Minister of Environment, there's been a lot of effort to ensure that we look at how can we test these emissions of the vehicles. But we need to have a foundation first by training of the officers so that they have the capacity to train this. And the capacity, of course, of vehicles, because we have, of course, Kenya, they say that we have more than 5 million vehicles. Of course, not like India. India, no, we have millions. Yeah. But so having this, and maybe we have only maybe 200 or 300 officers who have capacity to do this. So how long will it take them to train this and how frequently? So those are the laws they're trying to create to ensure that, because I know around 2 years ago, the government was keen on initiating this in 2021 to see whether we can have testing units where we can have vehicles every 3 years, vehicles which are over 10 years to be tested so that we are given sticker to operate. But this has not happened so far. But I think there's a lot of goodwill, because I know the current government, because now we have a new government which was elected to power in August last year. The new government is trying to come up with a supporting system of e-mobility transition, going to electric vehicles. But we still have challenges in terms of charging infrastructure. And also in Kenya, just like India, we have a lot of motorcycles which are used for public transport. Yeah? And the target is first, how do we help the motorcycle to transit from the carburetor system to the e-mobility where they need to transition? So there's a lot of effort, and I think we have a lot of pilot projects at around 8 companies which are dealing with that. And we hope that if you are able to get our transition right in terms of getting the power, which can enable people to get confidence, to have a reliable and quite a number of charging infrastructure I think that will be very critical in addressing the issue of air quality, reducing the negative impact of air quality, which actually has an health impact. And you see most of these vehicles operate in cities, which is the focus of cities and will be. Yeah.
You know, Romanus, you mentioned the term NDCs earlier, and just for the benefit of our audience, can you describe what you were referring to there? Because we are talking to, you know, just any audience right now.
I get you. National determined contributions in terms of what are some of the contributions to the climate issues. And the, most of the traditional, we have the energy, you have the transport, you have the agriculture, waste. These are major contributions. And that's why I was using transport just to demonstrate in terms of the transition from the carburetor system to the electric vehicles, how that can be a contribution to the national determinant contribution to climate.
Okay. I wanted to go back to another thing you mentioned, Romanus, about local sensors, right?
Not really as such. Actually, what I meant is low cost, in terms of cost. Low cost sensors, yeah. That's what we
are. So where are they coming from then?
Yeah, they are coming from different areas, yeah, because these are now, the market is open, and I know the purple air sensors is one of the cheapest, and also it's a small sensors which you can, I think it's around $200. So for an institution, this is something which you can invest in, and you can get the real time data. So that's what we are looking at. We are not looking for very expensive sensors. Because the spirit here is to increase the dense of air quality monitoring within Kenya and also most of the African cities here. That's the spirit.
And what are the constituents that these sensors measure? Is it mostly and only particulate matter or other constituents as well?
Yeah, the local sensors, most of them, they measure the particulate matter, the 2.5 and 10, and also they can also measure humidity, very basic, but we are focusing on the PM and especially the 2.5, which you know in terms of health impact, it's dangerous in terms of being it air. Yeah. So that's what we are focused, the PM 2.5, especially.
I mean, this reminds me of a study. I had an intern a few years ago from Bangladesh. She was actually studying for a PhD in Tokyo, but she came and joined me for a few months. And her dissertation was monitoring air quality and lung function at a school, which was near some sort of industry. I forget which industry. But it sounds like in Nakuru, at least, the dominant source of particulate matter pollution is from transport sector, right?
You're right, yeah, transport sector.
So yeah. Let's talk about the two cities then. I mean, Nairobi is like a huge city, right? How many people in Nairobi?
Around 5 million, 4 to 5 million.
Right. And Nakuru is what, 10% of that?
Yeah, around 500,000 to 600,000 there.
Yeah. So it must be very different to design sampling and placement of these sensors and the number of sensors between Nairobi and Nakuru, right?
Yeah. You're right, yeah.
So how many did you end up putting in Nairobi versus Nakuru so far? Just roughly.
Yeah, I think Nairobi, we have over 200 sensors because we are also working closely with UNEP, because UNEP has really worked with them. So they are sensors which we are working with UNEP. But you see the sensors also, because we are working with the local authorities, they are demand driven. They guide us in terms of where they feel they need these sensors in terms of where they want also to monitor. And especially along the industrial area, we have a lot of concerns of people complaining about the air quality. So you have a lot of high-dense sensors around the industrial area for Nairobi. Because Nairobi, it started a long time, I think 2018, and UNEP has been working and now, yeah. So the new kid on the block is the Athletics Kenya, because you know Kenya is an athletic country. We run, we have good runners.
So, <Right. laughs>
so for the last 2 years, we've been working with the Athletics Kenya, and even last weekend we had an athlete games on Saturday, last Saturday, and we were there. Even the president of the country was there, and there were some runners from US. They don't run us. US, Jamaica were here, and what we normally do as SCI Africa, we normally partner with Athletics Kenya to locate sensors in the stadium so that we are able to monitor the air quality around the stadium a week and maybe during the sports and the after the event. So we are doing that and we are really working with that. And now we are also expanding this to Africa, where we are now even working with the Senegal government and also Zambia to locate sensors in their stadium. Wow. So we are trying to look at air quality and health and sports. Yeah? So we are looking at that, how that also you look at the sports of the health of the sportsmen. So coming back to Nairobi, that's what we have. There were over 200. For Nakuru, we only managed to do 8 sensors so far, and we are distributed in the following manner. We have one in an open space, one in a commercial facility, one in a health facility, another in a school education facility, another one in a sports facility. Also, we have Nakuru Athletics Club, which also produces most of our rugby players. You see, Kenya will be playing rugby seven. So the Athletics Club is one of the producers of most of the Kenya rugby players. So we have a census there. So that's how we are. That's the determination. And also, as I say, it's demand-driven. We are looking at the demand-driven. So that in future, if we have enough resources, we are able now to look at rationally from the science perspective. How do we count? How do we locate in all the land uses like agriculture? We know agriculture is also a major emitter of air quality. No, Kenya being an agricultural country, so it's something which we need to expand once we have resources to make it more objective, to cover more aspects of land uses.
So, Romanis, tell us how at least your work with your partners is trying to institutionalize this in terms of, I'm just wondering, in terms of raising the funds to, get these sensors, install them, maintain them, interpret the data, download the data, understand it, and then, put it to good use, that entire chain, how does it get institutionalized? What stage are you at? What are your thoughts and hopes about where it can go and when?
Thanks, Vishal. I think to me, there are three aspects which you need to look at. The constituent, people can benefit from this particular intervention. One, at the lowest level where the community, people who live there, who normally bear the brunt of the air quality, especially if it is compromised. So to me, it's very useful to work with the community to understand how this thing impacts them so that they are sensitive. The second level of constituent in terms of people who can benefit as partners or as stakeholders is the government or the county government. In general, I can say the duty bearers, people who are supposed to undertake all this in terms of making their standards and also they are protecting the health and well-being of the citizens. So to me, they are also very critical in terms of taking this. The third aspect are the researchers and academicians in terms of documenting this for continuous and also for ensuring that whatever we do can also inform future generation in terms of people who are studying, but also other researchers who are doing this, so that when they publish this, it also reaches out beyond the local constituency. And then the fourth element, which I think the fourth level people will need to look at, are our other partners. These are development partners and even finding partners, people who also work in this particular place. And this, we've been working closely with GIZ. GIZ is a German development authority. And also, we've also been working with the SDI. These are Slum Dwellers International. We've worked with the Slum Dwellers International Kenyan chapter on this because they've been supporting a lot of work on this. So in terms of institutionalizing, of course, these are the players. But the county government becomes very important, or the local authorities becomes very important. And the local authorities become important from the three levels. You have the technical officers, we might call them the frontline officers. These are the environmental officers who are able to pick this data to make information and also to help in making decisions and also in terms of regulating what's happening. So the frontline officers are very important, the technical officers. The other level at the local authority who are very important are the politicians. You have the county assemblies, you have the local assembly. we have the, these are the lawmakers. If they are able to formulate laws using this evidence, which will help to institutionalize and to enable the frontline officers to use those particular laws and policies to make information, that is very, 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 very important. Of course, the third level, which is the highest, the executive, these are the governor or the mayors. Yeah? So to me, if the we can get the buy-in at local level from these three, from those three of three categories, the technical who are the frontline, the politicians who are the lawmakers and the executive, then I think we'll go far. So in terms of now trying to institutionalize, we are trying to work very closely with the county to ensure that we are able to sensitize the politicians, the executive and the technical officers in terms of the usefulness of this particular data, and more so the technical officers' ability to interpret and to download this data to make decision. To me, if you are managing, if you are able to do this, then I'll be a very happy man because they will need my presence there. Even my absence, they're able to use this to make informed decisions. Right. Yeah.
So, Romanus, I was wondering if you'd like to share one story with the audience, with all of us, you know, where you were doing this work, because I know that you work very closely at all these levels, you know, with the community level, the county level. And I was just curious if you could share one story where, you know, you showed the data and you had some interaction and then you had like a very fulfilling, inspiring moment emerge from that.
Yeah, thanks. There's maybe one of the memorable stories is during when we are doing the interaction with the policy makers. We had an engagement workshop with them. And in the policy workshop, we also invited some of the community leaders. I normally call them the gatekeepers. These are the chiefs of the local administration. Just also to have a feel in terms of how policymakers also view this particular issue. And one of the fascinating things is how we have a lot of solutions within the community members. More times, we normally ignore things that they are not expert in anything. But once they have useful information, they have more creative ways in terms of how we can address this issue. Mm. Because remember, Vishal, we had a lot of our work was before, in Nakuru was focusing on informal settlement. Informal settlements are in Africa, maybe in India. These are unplanned settlements, so there's no plan for them in terms of distribution of land uses. And one of the major challenges in this particular area, since we demonstrated within the city, which had an open space, that the air quality was low in those particular areas. And in most of our informal settlements, they don't have open space, official open spaces, like a football pitch or others. So they were saying that there are areas which have been carved out because they have, what do you call it, high power voltage. These are the power lines. Yeah? So you find that you cannot develop anything beneath those particular areas. And they say, you cannot build a house because of the risk it has. But because this high power voltage, there's nothing within. I can't use this as open space and even have air quality measurement. Those particular, you see whether is it safer than our houses or where we normally crowd and cook and we pollute and other things. Mm. And they challenge the policymakers to see how creative they can use such kind of spaces, the riparian reserves along the river line, which can be made active so that they can interact with those particular spaces. And this will, which make a lot of sense even from a planner. I'm an urban planner by we know those places are supposed to be reserved. But I could see how they can also be made active for people who don't have space to interact and also to relax. How do we make them active?
Right.
Yeah. So to me, that was very fascinating coming from very local people who are not trained in anything, but they have seen that green spaces have less air quality. And they look at where the green spaces within their areas, which can be very useful. So to me, those are areas which are critical, which make, if you look at the nature-based solution system, then you can see how do you make such kind of active in informal settlement to make them more safe and more attractive to users within the residence of such kind of settlements. Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks, Romanus. That's very, very fascinating. What are your thoughts for the next phase for this air pollution work? Where would you like to see it in the next couple of years? And I think that with that, you can just share your you know, ending thoughts for this episode?
Yeah, thanks. I think two things in terms of my thoughts. One is look at the governance of air quality and cities so that, for example, we know that most of the planning, zoning regulations and development control measures, they don't take into account most of the air quality concerns. We are concerned about the space use, about the setbacks, about the accessibility, but very critically, we don't factor in the air quality. So I'm saying that in future, we need to see how do we embrace air quality in terms of informing our zoning regulations. And when we are revising these zoning regulations, because Nakuru just became a city in the year 2021 officially. That's when it became a city. That was, I think, December 2021. That's when it became a city. So as they define their city zoning regulation, I think it would be very important to use some of our data to inform such kind of decision. And secondly, is to look at how do we ensure that these aspects are institutionalized, yeah? And which is now beyond the queue, the city health and well-being. I think we are trying to work around with other partners, such as the GIZ and the SDI, and even the county, the county of Nakuru, to ensure that whatever we have can inform their decision. Around 2 weeks ago, they started a process through GIZ-supported process, doing a climate risk assessment, yeah, to enable them to come up with more informed and objective climate change action plan for the entire county. And Nakuru is one of the largest county in Kenya. It has 55 wards, so they need to come up with their ward action plan for 55 ward action plan, which should be amalgamated to one for the county. So such kind of a living document, to me, I think they are very important because it gives you joy to see that the evidence you started and the process you started can live beyond you. And to me, I think those are the things that I'll look at the legacy of the project. To me, I'll be very keen to the legacy of the queue. And that should be something which will go beyond me. And beyond us, Vishal, your modeling, it's very important to see how this goes beyond us. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't think of better words to end this episode. But thank you. Thank you so much for joining us, Romanus. And I hope we can have you on again for a future episode. And I hope I can join you in Nairobi and Nakuru myself.
You're welcome. So
thanks again.
Thanks.
SEI is an international nonprofit that works in several countries at the intersection of science and policy. You can find out more at www.sei.org.